WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Sherman Alexie is a Spokane Coeur d'Alene Indian and at the age of 26, a newcomer to the literary world. He grew up on a reservation near Spokane, Washington, and now lives in Spokane. He's written several books of poetry and has a new collection of short stories called The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fistfight in Heaven. His writing chronicles contemporary Indian life, from the poverty on the reservation to the rich spiritual traditions. Sherman Alexie wrote in one of his stories that imagination was a weapon on the reservation. I asked him what he meant.
It wasn't as much protecting me from something as in giving me hope toward the future, giving me those tools and those ideas which enable me to rise above the conditions on a reservation, and in sense of, I guess, protecting me against the despair and depression and anger and pain that can, you know, easily erupt on a reservation also. I mean, you create these whole other worlds for yourself that are better than the one you're in.
When did you begin to write?
Well, seriously, about 5 years ago, I took a creative writing class in college because I needed the credits. And
really?
Yes. And my writing teacher, the first assignment was to hand in five poems. So I went and wrote them, and then I handed him under his door early. And then the next week of class, he took me outside before the class, and I thought he was going to tell me, you know, that you shouldn't take this class, you know, you don't want to take this class. But then he asked me what I was doing for the rest of my life, and I told him I had no idea, and he said I should write. So
when he said that to you, you really should think seriously about being a writer. What did that do to kind of change your view of what you thought your life would be?
Well, I was at a very malleable point in my life, so having a figure who I instantly respected, Alex Kuo is his name, he's also a writer, at the college, having a respected figure like that, somebody who I thought was a good writer, tell me that, I thought, well, I mean, I should be listening, and I needed that kind of guidance at the time, needed something of a father figure.
Describe for us the reservation that you grew up in, and this was what, outside of Spokane, Washington?
Yes, it's just about 45 miles northwest of Spokane, Washington. It's a Spokane Indian reservation. It's a rather small reservation, a small tribe, but it's you know, it's pretty isolated. It's very mountainous, pine tree forests, a lot of lakes and streams, and like most reservations, you know, 80% unemployment, a lot of depression, a lot of alcoholism, a lot of all kinds of addictions, but there's also, like other reservations, a real spiritual sense and a lot of people living the best they can under the circumstances and surviving and doing well spiritually and emotionally, even though they may not be doing well financially.
Your father worked for the BIA, though, is that right?
He was off and on employment for the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Spokane Tribe. We also had some farmland where there was a small amount of income. He is an alcoholic and was a binge drinker, which prevented him from holding a job for very long periods of time.
What effect do you think his drinking had on you?
Aside from any of the, dysfunctional family issues that come up, you know, issues of abandonment or whatever, I mean, it affected me by seeing somebody that you loved very much, somebody who was, in most respects, a very good man, a very kind man and a loving father, a very gentle person and a very sensitive and emotional man, broken and defeated by the reservation and by his own failed dreams. So, I mean, what that gave to me was a real sense of insecurity about my own dreams and about my own expectations of myself, you know, things I still carry around.
How elaborate were his dreams?
He grew up pretty much like me, in fact, because I ended up going to a white high school just off the reservation, and he went to a white Catholic high school in Coeur d'Alene. And he was bright, and he was, you know, athletic and talented and very intelligent. In fact, he was Coeur d'Alene City Foxtrot Champion in 1956, you know. So he had a certain amount of outside influence. You know, he was involved in the dominant culture way earlier than a lot of people are, a lot of Indians of his generations are. So, you know, he had the dreams of college and of, you know, big jobs and that kind of thing. And he ended up back on the reservation because of a various number of reasons. He had as large of dreams as I ever did.
Well, was he offered the opportunity to go to college? How close did he get to that?
He didn't have the money. He didn't have, you know, the experience. He didn't know how to get to college. He was scared of it. He didn't have the help that I did and, you know, other Indians have done in my generation. So he was left pretty much alone in those decisions, even within his family who, you know, nobody had gone to college. You know, few had graduated high school, in fact. So it was a matter of being completely alone in his decisions, mm-hmm. and he didn't have enough courage or knowledge to make those decisions correctly.
What was he like when he was drunk?
Oh, he was still a very gentle man. Really? He was never a violent man. He's never been a violent man. It was just that he would leave.
He'd physically leave.
He would not be in the house for however long. I mean, the binges have decreased incredibly in frequency. They don't happen, you know, once a year maybe now. But at the time it was happening, he'd leave for, you know, 2-3 weeks and be gone during that time. So, I mean, it's not a matter of physical violence, but it certainly was emotionally violent to have your father gone for those periods of time.
How pervasive, then, is drinking on at least the particular reservation that you grew up in? And again, I'll just say that in your book, there are many, many references to drinking and drinking too much.
Yeah, well, it's very pervasive on a reservation, of course. You know, there are more alcoholics among Native Americans than in the Germanino population. But just to make a point, there are also more total abstainers among Native Americans than in the general population. So certainly alcoholism is a specific problem for Native Americans, and it's something I address because it affected me deeply. But, I mean, there's not a family in this country that has not been affected deeply by alcoholism.
When did you start drinking?
Actually, when I was 18, I didn't drink all. I've never drank on a reservation, which is a thing, and I never saw more drinking than I ever did at college, you know.
Well, did you hold off on drinking until you got to college because of what effect it had on your father?
Yeah, it was part of it, seeing all that going on a day-to-day basis. And then, I mean, I was sort of arrogant about it, too. And then when I got to college and got that serious culture shock and started losing hope in myself, that insecurity, that feeling like I was a failure, not going to be able to be as good as these other white kids in the school, not being as smart or as successful or as, you know, all those good things I didn't think I would be able to do. And so I started into the alcohol then as a way of numbing all that pain and insecurity.
My guest is writer Sherman Alexie. His new collection of short stories is called The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fistfight in Heaven. We'll be back with a reading after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Writer Sherman Alexie is my guest. Here's an excerpt from his story, Family Portrait.
The television was always loud, too loud, until every conversation was distorted, fragmented. Dinner sounded like leave me alone. I love you sounded like inertia. Please sounded like sacrifice. Believe me, the television was always too loud. At 3 a.m, I woke from ordinary nightmares to hear the television pounding the ceiling above my bed. Sometimes it was just white noise, the end of another broadcasting days. Other times it was a bad movie made worse by the late hour and interrupted sleep. Drop your weapons and come out with your hands above your head. Sounded too much like trust me, the world is yours. The aliens are coming, the aliens are coming. Sounded too much like just one more beer, sweetheart, and then we'll go home. Junior, I lost the money. Sounded too much like you'll never have a dream come true. I don't know where all the years went. I remember only the television in detail. All the other moments worth remembering became stories that changed with each telling until nothing was aboriginal or recognizable. For instance, in the summer of 1972 or 1973 or only in our minds, the reservation disappeared. I remember standing on the front porch of our HUD house, practicing on my plastic saxophone when the reservation disappeared. Finally, I remember thinking, but I was 6 years old or 7, I don't know for sure how old, I was Indian. And just like that, there was nothing there beyond the bottom step. My older brother told me he'd give me a quarter if I jumped into the unknown. My twin sisters cried equal tears. Their bicycles had been parked out by the pine trees. All of it vanished. And my mother, she came out to investigate the noise. She stared out past the bottom step for a long time. But there was no expression on her face when she went back to wash the potatoes. My father was happily drunk, and he stumbled off the bottom step before any of us could stop him. He came back years later with diabetes and a pocket full of quarters. The seeds in the cuffs of his pants dropped to the floor of our house and grew into orange trees. Nothing is possible without vitamin C, my mother told us. But I knew she meant to say, don't want everything so much.
That's such a powerful passage there, and for me, there's several things going on. One, of course, I think is true for many families. I think for all families, which is what is said and what is meant, the kind of disconnect, and sometimes even the good disconnect between between the sort of intention and the reality. Is that something you felt you grew up with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we all talk in symbols. You know, there's this whole huge language thing going on that we're, I mean, you get these shared symbols even in a family where it's this little culture going on where all these things happening, you're communicating through these codes and these words that have only a specific meaning for the family. And you miss things, too, because people are changing the language all the time. So you never exactly know what's going on in a family. The communication channels are always a little distorted.
Let me ask you how you were able to give up the drinking and even how bad it got.
Well, there's two versions I tell, one for the non-believers and one for the believers. So the non-believer version is that I quit drinking because I was tired of being sick and that I knew I needed to quit drinking in order to pursue what I wanted to be with this writer. I knew there was, I knew I was getting looked at as a role model and a successful Native American. I knew that did not include alcohol. The second reason, the believer's reason, is that I had a dream. My grandmother, Big Mom, came to me in a dream and told me to quit drinking.
Hmm. Which do you believe?
Oh, the dream.
The dream, of course. There's another section I'd like to have you read.
Okay, and this is from a story called All I Wanted to Do Was Dance. Victor was dancing with a Lakota woman in a Montana bar. He had no idea why he was there. He couldn't even remember how he arrived. All he knew was that he was dancing with the 100th Indian woman in the 100 dancing days since the white woman he loved had left him. This dancing was his compensation, his confession, largest sin and penance. "You're beautiful," he said to the Lakota woman. "And you're drunk," she said. But she was beautiful, with hair and eyes so dark and long. He imagined she was a reservation eclipse, full. He needed special glasses to look at her. He could barely survive her reflection. "You're a constellation," he said. "And you're really drunk," she said. Then she was gone, and he was laughing, dancing through the bar all by himself. He wanted to sing, but he couldn't think of any lyrics. He was drunk, bruised by whiskey, brutal. His hair was electricity. "I started World War I," he shouted. "I shot Lincoln." He was underwater drunk, staring up at the faces of his past. He recognized Neil Armstrong and Christopher Columbus, his mother and father, James Dean, Sal Mineo, Nedley Wood. He staggered, fell against other dancers, found himself in the back seat of a grasshopper as it traveled uneasily down reservation dirt roads. "Where are we?" he asked a flathead driver with insane braids. "Heading back to Arlique, cousin. You said you wanted a ride." "Shoot, all I wanted to do was dance."
Do you remember feeling that way when you were drinking?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about feeling guilty about everything that ever happened, you know, you get that, I shot Kennedy, I shot Lincoln, I shot every president that's been shot, you know, I shot Reagan, I'm responsible for earthquakes and tornadoes, you know, my father and my mother are this way because of me, my friends are this way because of me, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guilt.
There's a lot of grandiosity, too.
Oh, I mean, you know, the self-pitying martyr routine, you know, it's huge. And the, you know, the fatalistic, narcissistic aspects of all that. I mean, there's some sort of, you know, dignity about being an Indian destroying yourself with alcohol.
Are you saying that ironically?
Very ironically.
Yeah. My guest is Sherman Alexie, and he's a Spokane Coeur d'Alene Indian. He's also a writer, a poet. He's got a book of poetry coming out very soon called First Indian on the Moon. And he was just reading from a new collection of short stories called The Lone Ranger and Tonto, Fistfight in Heaven. You left the reservation, the reservation you grew up in. How old were you when you left?
Well, I lived there until I was 18. I went to the white high school. I drove off the reservation to go to a white high school. I left the reservation to go to college, and I've only lived there for a brief time period after I finished college. But I live in Spokane now, which is, you know, just close to the reservation for a couple reasons. I mean, one is because I like cable television.
Is that always on in your apartment?
It's always on. I'm cross-cultural. And the other reason is because, I mean, there's a lot of pain associated with the reservation. A lot of bad memories and a lot of, it's hard to see friends and former friends and even people I didn't necessarily get along with falling apart.
Is that what happens to them when they stay behind?
A lot of them, not all of them, certainly not all of them, but a majority. And it's hard to see that. And, you know, you get your heart broken on a daily basis. And, you know, I have enough pain in my life as it is.
Do you feel, I mean, you mentioned the sort of guilt associated with drinking. Do you feel any guilt associated with living off the reservation?
Oh yeah, certainly. I have survivor's guilt, for one, of being successful and doing well and seeing a lot of other people who were bright and very good people not make it for a variety of reasons. So certainly I have survivor's guilt. And I have guilt living off my reservation, being apart from my people like that. But they haven't necessarily always embraced me either.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I was different, you know. I was always driven to make a life for myself beyond the reservation boundaries, beyond the tribal boundaries. So that wasn't necessarily viewed as a good thing by a lot of people, and those people still don't think it's a good thing.
But when you go back, and I assume you do, I mean, you said you did, you go back to see family, to see friends. What does that feel like for you? I mean, is it feel more and more foreign as time goes on?
I don't think it feels more and more foreign, but it certainly feels foreign. When I'm driving back onto the reservation, I always feel like it's the start of some really bad TV movie, you know, that if they ever filmed it, because you got this semi-prodigal son returning home to the reservation, to his people and his tribe. So I always feel that way. And then I drive to the house and have dinner and play a little basketball with my little brother and his friends, and then it feels fine. But there's a real nervousness and fear and tension in me when I'm driving onto the reservation. But it usually relaxes as I spend a little more time around my family, and then it increases as my family and I bring up, you know, the same old problems that we always do.
Writer Sherman Alexie, his book of short stories is called The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fistfight in Heaven. This is Fresh Air.